Number 10, review of the Columbia River Fishery Management Policy, which is C-3620. This is a briefing and a public hearing. Guy Norman. That's the appointments person. Oh, no. That's Molly. Kelly is, I think, he's boss. She's hired.
Jim said he'd do it. Maybe I don't want to tell her.
Welcome, Guy.
Thank you. Chair Wecker, good afternoon. Chair Wecker, commissioners, Deputy Director Storr. For the record, my name's Guy Norman, and I am the Regional Director for the Department for Southwest Washington. With me today is Ron Roller, who's the Columbia River Policy Coordinator, and I'm pleased to also announce Robin Elke as the Assistant Policy Coordinator for the Columbia River. She does a whole lot of the legwork associated with managing the Columbia River fisheries. So today we're going to review for the second review of the Columbia River Salmon Management Policy. And this policy was adopted in 2013 by the Commission after a joint effort by Oregon Fish and Wildlife and Washington Fish and Wildlife to enact this policy. This policy is effective through 2023, and there's a transition period of 4 years from 2013 to 2016. And then, of course, an annual review. The first one was last year. This is the second one, and we've got two more reviews with a comprehensive review that will take place after 2016. During this transition period, there are seven main aspects of the transition. First of all, a progressive shift to main stem salmon allocation to the sport fishery, and that is an ongoing allocation shift that occurs throughout the 4 years, with a 2017 full implementation of the full allocation shift. Further development of selective gear for the main stem commercial fishery. Primary focus has been the development of seine fisheries, and there has been some other gear that has been tested as well by both departments, and we'll go into that a little bit further in the presentation. Implementing pilot alternative gear commercial fisheries. We had the first pilot beach seine and purse seine fishery that occurred in 2014, and we'll get into some details in terms of reporting on the results of that fishery later in the report. Increasing salmon production in the off-channel areas. Most of that occurs on the Oregon side of the river, but we also have some enhancements that are occurring on the Washington side as well. Investigating expansions of the off-channel fisheries in the commercial safe areas, and we're focusing on the Cathlamet Channel at this point in time in the state of Washington, and then begin development of a buyback program. We're currently discussing with Oregon timing and how to proceed forward with investigating buyback programs, and then additional measures to enhance the fishery management effectiveness, and those are focused on trying to improve run size forecasts as well as in-season monitoring and management of the fishery to make sure that we're meeting both allocation and conservation objectives. So that's my introduction. I'm going to turn the bulk of the report over to Ron and Robin. And so first of all, we're going to turn it over to Ron to discuss 2014 policy implementation.
Thank you, Guy. Commissioners, you already got me twisted up now. As part of the 2014 policy implementation, we'll discuss public process, implementing provisions of the policy, adaptive management, fishery policy guidelines, planning, and performance. The public process in 2014, there were 51 Columbia River Compact joint state hearings held. Three Columbia River Recreational and Commercial Advisory Group meetings were held to receive input on fishery management and alternative gear development. The department also participated in the North of Falcon process, working with managers and constituents to develop management plans for summer and fall fisheries, including the seine fisheries. Gillnet buyback. The department is coordinating with Oregon Fish and Wildlife and the industry to develop, to evaluate interest in the buyback program. We're still working on funding sources. There have none identified thus far. Development, implementation of alternative gear. Seines can be a viable gear to catch salmon in the fall, but steelhead handle can be relatively high. A pilot seine fishery was conducted in the fall with mixed results. This will be covered later in the section presented by Robin. Seines fished in the summer handled moderate numbers of Chinook, but sockeye handle is high, which causes problems with ESA-listed Snake River sockeye. Our science section has been reanalyzing the seine mortality study data in an attempt to address some of the technical problems encountered during tax review. We have proposed a revised methodology and mortality estimates for Chinook and steelhead for review by TAC.
Ron, pardon us. Commissioner Carpenter.
Ron, I have a question there. Second bullet. Last night we received a document with some new modeling of the release mortalities, and so I just want to question where it says steel at a handle can be relatively high. Based on what I saw last night, I guess I need clarification.
What you're looking at last night was mortality rates. Now, that's release mortalities. Now, handle of steelhead is higher in seine gears because it catches the fish that are in the area. You know, the fish can't move through unless they're real small, like sockeye or something. So it's the difference is between handle of fish and what you were presented last night was mortality of released fish.
That answer. Yes, I don't know what the difference is. If you got a 5% or less release mortality, I don't understand the differential between that and the handle. I guess I need some guidance there.
Commissioner Carpenter, if I may. So there's two things in play: the number of steelhead handled actually in the gear, and then what the mortality rate is. And I believe the range for mortality on steelhead is relatively low, 3 to 8%, depending on whether it's beach seine or purse seine. So there is an ESA limit on non-Indian steelhead impacts. It's a 2% cap, and there's not a whole lot of room there. So the key is that low mortality, but also we've got to pay attention to total handle as well, because that comes up with the total mortality. So,
thank you. That helps.
He does a better job than I do. We've proposed a revised methodology, which we looked at last night with a Fish Committee meeting, and mortality estimates for Chinook and steelhead. These are going to be reviewed by TAC. These new estimates are lower for Chinook and coho than the interim values used in 2014. TAC and NOAA review is expected to be complete by March 2015. Development, implementation of alternative gear. Coho tangle nets were evaluated and showed promise for harvest of significant hatchery stocks using limited ESA impacts. Full fleet fishery were implemented in 2013 and 14. The structure is similar to the spring Chinook seasons when we have live capture regulations in place. And 2015 will likely include another tangle net fishery for coho. A three-year mortality study was completed in 2015 by ODF&W, analysis of post-release mortalities. It's still ongoing when kind of this... Actually, we're working... It's almost complete. They're working on finishing that up. When these are finished, these new mortality rates will replace interim mortality rates. Some adjustments were made in 2014. Other gear types reviewed or under investigation include troll gear, pound net, fish wheels, floating fish traps, and arrow nets. All of these had low catch rates or inconclusive, but we're still looking at pound nets. We'll be assessing that again in 2015. Washington Select Area Plans. We're going to continue to investigate the Cathlamet Channel as a new selective area site. 2015 will be the third year. We'll continue to work with the City of Cathlamet and resource agencies to secure net pen site and permits. Spring Chinook smolts, about 200,000 released in 2014 from net pens. We have a similar plan for 2015. Deep River releases of 350K were discontinued in 2014 due to poor returns of these fish, mainly as moved. This production was moved to Cathlamet Channel. Work to secure funding for Spring Chinook and Coho enhancements, in particular federal funding from Mitchell Act and BPA.
Director Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Ron and maybe Guy. So we had a $300,000 general fund state request in our budget for the net pen production and the Cathlamet Channel. That was not included in the governor's budget. So does that affect the statement similar plan for 2015, or is that a 2016 impact?
So, Director Anderson, that'll be 2016 impacts, and that is, I mean, tied into that last bullet, which is we're still trying to explore other funding alternatives to keep that program going.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Holtzmiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I get you to back up a slide? Back where you were talking about the pound nets. And I'm sorry, but I would just as soon stop and ask these questions so I know what the heck you're talking about. If you could just give me a little bit of an explanation on some of those narrow net.
A pound net is a fixed gear. We experimented with it a little bit in 2013. It was put in late in the run, so it didn't have a good opportunity to perform. But it's kind of a trap with leads. So this year, in 2015, they're going to try and redo it, getting in during the peak of the run and using longer leads. A lead is something that runs out in the river to direct fish into it. So we're going to be looking at it again. It's essentially kind of like a trap.
What is an arrow net?
To tell you the truth, I didn't do anything at all with arrow nets, and I don't know what they are. They didn't work.
So, Commissioner Holtzmiller, actually have a definition for an arrow net here. And it's a shore-based arrow net, which consists of a large mesh lead with a tangle net fish trap on the outer end. And that has been tested in 2013 and 2014. So it's a fixed trap as well, different kind of lead, a little different than the pound net, but the same concept.
Thank you.
Okay. We're at, should be at 11. Yep. Okay, Oregon Select Area Plans. They plan on expanding season opportunities, providing additional hatchery fish by shifting current production and providing new production. Enhanced production is on track in 2014. 2015 on track for Coho, Spring Chinook, Fall Chinook may be about 250,000 short of the 1.9 million goal based on returns and brood stock collection. Research area boundary expansion, making their select areas a little bit larger, establishing new select area sites. Oregon did a study on four additional sites that will continue in 2015, and one of those sites was Coal Creek Slough in Washington. Additional plan elements. Barbless hooks required to aid in the safe release of wild fish. Oregon is considering exemptions of specific select area sites and parts of the Willamette. That's happening today in their commission meeting. We are also considering exemptions during certain times and areas in some lower river tributaries. To increase management certainty, the department continues to work to secure funding sources to support fishery monitoring, data collection, and analysis. We're working to improve accuracy of pre-season forecasts and in-season run size updates, ongoing and TAC reviews, and improve in-season tracking of ESA impacts of each fishery using weekly run size updates and weekly catch updates. Adaptive management. Commissions track implementation through annual reviews, and if policy expectations are not achieved, we determine the causes and identify action to correct course and make adjustments needed to stay on track. The key elements and principles of the plan would remain intact. Reconsideration of state-managed mainstem fisheries may take place under the following circumstances: lower than anticipated catch and expectation, economic expectations to the commercial fishery, insufficient space in off-channel sites to accommodate the commercial fleet, biological, fiscal, and or legal circumstances that delay or preclude implementation of alternative gear, buyback of commercial permits, and addition of off-channel hatchery investments. Management objectives are not achieved for sport and commercial fisheries, conflicts with terms of the U.S. v. Oregon Management Agreement with Columbia River Tribes, and failure to meet conservation objectives. We will monitor these and prepare to address them in detail in the 2016 review.
So we're going to turn it over to Robin Elke to go through 2014 fisheries in some detail. Before we do that, I want to announce that we do have a detailed report that has been posted online, and I see the commissioners do have that in front of them, so I meant to announce that before we started. But it is for the public. It is posted online as well. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Robin Elke.
Thank you. I'm going to start with the 2014 spring season. Our Upper River spring Chinook forecast was 227,000 spring Chinook. That's our most constraining stock. Our actual return was 242,600 fish. That's about 107% of forecast, which is actually pretty good as far as accuracy. Our ESA impacts, we shared those 70-30 between sport and commercial fisheries. And we had a lower river sport season that was open 77 of the 107 days possible from the March 1 through June 15 spring season. And that included 13 days in April. And that's part of our season objective for the spring fisheries and for the sport that we have, I think it was 45 days from March 1 forward of opportunity. For the Zone 6 season, we had 86 days open between March 16th and May 9th. We closed for a short period and were able to reopen May 31 and continue through the end of the season on June 15. For the Snake River sport fishery, that fishery opened in four areas. Depending on how many fish they have, sometimes it's two, sometimes it's three, and four is the optimum number of areas they've been operating under lately in that fishery when the fish are available. They do have the staggered closures that occurred through late May. They usually don't open until the end of April when the fish start arriving up in that area. So they continued until late May, and then we also were able to get that fishery reopened in June, and it carried through the month of June. So that fishery was open for 62 days. We did incorporate some of the adaptive management clauses that are in the policy that allows us to have some flexibility in how to manage those fisheries. We moved some of the available harvestable fish to the fisheries upstream of Bonneville Dam once we had a run size update, once the Lower River Sport fishery was fully open and it became apparent that there were going to be additional fish for harvest that we could roll over into those upper above Bonneville fisheries. And so we were able to do that this spring. For our commercial fisheries, we had five periods that occurred from April 1 and through June 5th. We used tangle nets up until about the middle of May. Shad start entering the Columbia River about mid-May, and as we still had harvestable fish available for the commercial fisheries and to continue those seasons, we adopted adaptive management rules that would allow for a large mesh gear, and that helps us avoid an abundance of shad handle during those fisheries. We have 45-minute soak times. By using the large mesh gear, the gear doesn't get swamped with shad, and so therefore we know that we can keep that handle time of those ESA-listed salmon down to that 45 minutes that we want to see. So the last couple of periods, we did use large mesh gear. I think we did the same thing last year as well. For our select area fisheries, our harvest was well below average. I think the production was the same, but the harvest was something less. We did have to have a couple of days closure in those areas to make sure that we remained within the ESA impacts allocated specifically to those select area sites. For our recap on those summer seasons, there's a lot going on here, but for the commercial total there, and our catch balance, when we manage spring Chinook fisheries, we're bound by ESA impacts and we're bound by what we call catch balance. It's part of the USV-Oregon agreement, and we manage all the fisheries to remain within both of those constraints. So for the commercial fisheries, they were able to access 74% of the fish allocated to them through catch balance, and the ESA impacts, as far as what they were allocated, they came in at 103% of their ESA. For the sport fisheries, the catch balance allocated to them, they were able to access 90%, and their ESA limits were came in at 76% of allocated to the recreational fisheries. So in total, our spring season, we came in at 87% allowed on catch balance and 85% on ESA. For the sport fisheries, the catch balance is more constraining than the ESA limits, and that's the opposite for our commercial fisheries. They're more constrained by ESA than they are catch balance. We made, again, some decisions in season that would allow the, I think it was the last commercial period for that to be conducted, knowing, again, that our sport fisheries were wide open. We had ESA impacts on the table that weren't going to be spent, and so we made the decision to set that final commercial season. So when I say 103%, that was a result of the management decisions that we made based on the flexibility that was provided us in the policy. I think that's it for spring Chinook. For summer Chinook, we had a preseason forecast of 67,500 fish. Our actual return was something greater, about 78,000. Our forecast was 116% of, or our actual was 116% of forecast. So again, we came in a little bit better than projected. The fisheries upstream of Priest Rapids Dam were allocated 67% of the harvestable summer Chinook. We have the USV Oregon agreement. We also have the Upper Columbia Management Agreement. And based on that and the run size, 67% of the harvestable fish went upstream. And for our non-Indian fisheries downstream of Priest Rapids Dam, we share those 60-40 between sport and commercial fisheries. That's, again, based on policy guidance. For the sockeye forecast, it was 347,000 fish. Our actual return was something much greater. Pretty nice to see 645,000 sockeye returning to the Columbia River mouth. I'll probably mention here also that the Snake River component was also much improved, which is good news, although it's a very small piece of the overall run. It is our ESA-listed stock, and I think we forecasted something around 1,900, and it came in at almost 3,000, so that was pretty good for those fish. Again, on the sockeye, we're limited to a 1% ESA limit, which is pretty small, but we share those 70-30 between sport and commercial fisheries. And this year, we were able to allow retention of sockeye during our main stem fisheries. For the summer seasons in 2014, the Lower River Sport Fishery was open June 16 through 30, and then again July 3 through 31. I think there were probably 4 days in July during that July 3rd through 31 that we did end up closing, waiting for run updates, and then were able to reopen. But for the most part, it was open most of July. It is a marked selective fishery, and we do have a 2-hatchery fish bag limit on that fishery. We also manage the area from Bonneville upstream to Priest Rapids Dam. That fishery also opened June 16. That's the first day of our summer season. Also marked selective 2-fish bag. For the fishery upstream of Priest Rapids, that sport fishery opens about July 1. It depends on the geographic area, but that was a full season as well, marked selective with a 2-fish bag. For our commercial season, we ended up having 5 commercial periods. They were 8 to 12 hours each. For select areas, only Young's Bay, which is a select area on the Oregon side, that it's the only one that has a summer season. They target the early returning select area, Bright Falls Chinook, in that season. And then we also had Wanapum and Colville tribal fisheries. For our 2014 summer season results, again, a lot of information here, but just highlighting as far as how we did in remaining within our harvest allocations and sharing. For the fisheries that are downstream of Priest Rapids Dam, they were able to harvest 88% of the 6,500 fish that were allocated to them. For the fisheries upstream of Priest Rapids Dam, which include the sport fishery, the Wanapum tribal, and the Colville tribal, they were able to access 52% of the 13,000 allocated upstream of Priest Rapids. So all in all, fisheries harvested 71% of those harvestable fish. Again, looking at the finer detail in this table, the one that I see for the commercial fishery at 107%, again, an in-season management decision to allow that fishery to conduct its final period of the season, knowing that our sport fisheries were open and that that we would be able to remain in the allocated numbers given to us. So that, again, was a in-season decision, providing the flexibility to manage those fisheries to certainly remain within our allocation and provide access to those fish. Fall season, pretty busy season. Our forecast was 1.5 million, which is outstanding. Included in that was about 900,000 upriver bright fall Chinook. The ESA impacts, we allocate those. The policy says no more than 70-30 between sport and commercial on both upriver bright Chinook and the lower river hatchery Chinook. We do have that north of Falcon planning process. Once we were complete with that, our sharing was 32% URBs and 70% LRH to the sport fishery. Our actual estimate, which the forecast or the run reconstructions aren't complete yet, we won't have those until about the middle of February, but preliminary information tells us we're probably sitting at 1.1 million Chinook. It's about 77% of our forecast. Most of the shortage comes from the URBs. They're probably ended up somewhere around 650,000, and there's some pool upriver bright stock that returned to areas just upstream of Bonneville, and I think they came in at about 200,000, so maybe 100,000 fish shy. For our coho, a good year for coho as well. We had a preseason forecast of about 600,000. I didn't believe it when I heard it, but I eat my words now because our actual estimate is pushing somewhere around 900,000. That's pretty impressive, so about 140% of forecast. Our fisheries are constrained by ESA limits, mainly on those lower Columbia natural tule populations and also the lower Columbia River coho natural population. We met our fishery objectives for the 2014 season. Our postseason actual sharing, and again, not final, but certainly pending. We're looking like it might be more like a 36% for our URBs and an 80% LRH to sport, which is a little heavy on the sport side compared to our preseason planning. And likely to come, well, it depends on what our run sizes are, but it'll probably shift a little bit and hopefully in the right direction, I suppose. So for our sport fisheries with Buoy 10, we did meet our season objective, which was to have Chinook retention through Labor Day. Our angler trips were about 108,000. Our Chinook catch was the third highest that we've seen since the onset of that fishery, which is probably around the early 80s. The actual catch was less than our preseason estimate, but also so was our forecast. For our coho catch, we came in at nearly 60,000, and that was also a very high catch for the Buoy 10 area. And again, those allocated ESA impacts on those LCN tules was likely exceeded compared to what we had planned for preseason. We had a heavy, we had a stock mix that was heavier to those tules than the brights than what we modeled for. For the Lower River Sport Fishery, we do have season objectives, and those were met. We had about 144,000 angler trips. Our Chinook catch for that Lower River Sport Fishery, which is from Tongue Point upstream to Bonneville Dam. The Chinook catch ranked third highest as well, and again, less than our preseason expectation. Our coho catch was about 6,000, and that was very high for that area. I think it might be a record. And again, our allocated ESA impacts to those LCN tules, we probably were similar to forecast. However, you note that we also mentioned that we were less on the Chinook actual catch. So again, we were higher in stock comp for those LCN tules in both those sport fisheries than what we modeled for. For the 2014 fall commercial fishery, for the Chinook directed fisheries, those occurred August through October in zones 4 and 5. Our Chinook catch for both the early and the late portion of that fall season totaled 97,000 fish, which is similar to what we expected preseason. Our allocated ESA impacts on those tules was likely less than preseason. For our coho fisheries, those occur mainly in October in the lower zones, zones 1 through 3, which is basically from the mouth upstream to Lewis River, if you're familiar with that area. Our tanglenut gears, we had 9 periods during the course of October. Again, those are marked selective fisheries. We caught about 19,000 hatchery fish. Our deliveries were anywhere from 17 to 39 per period. Our additional coho fisheries included the small mesh gear. We had 13 periods of those, and we landed about 46,000 coho with deliveries ranging from 19 to 89. The lower numbers are probably on the tail end of that October season. For select area commercial fisheries in the fall, the season was standard, pretty much average compared to past years. Our Chinook catch of 24,000 was the highest we've seen since 1988. They had a real good year there. The coho catch was the highest on record at 168,000 fish. So, yeah, they did pretty good in the fall. So let's see, what else do we got? The pilot commercial saying fisheries next, right on cue. We had a 22-day season that occurred from August 22nd to September 30th. We conducted the fishery so that we could answer some of the research, or that we could address the research-related questions on how to implement this new gear type. We used ESA impacts from what we set aside for the research as part of the USV Oregon policy. We set aside a small amount of impact so that we can conduct research. And we had a lottery drawing in the, well, we asked for applications, obviously. We think we had 45 applicants. We drew 10 people, I suppose. And we had 6 beach and 4 purse seines. We assigned individual fish quotas to each one of the permits. That was to help us ensure that those fisheries were going to be economically viable. So we kept the number of fishermen. We had a low number of fish to work with given the ESA impacts. So we kept the number of fishers low enough so that we could assign enough fish to each permit so that for the fishermen it would be economically viable and they would be willing to pay for the application for the license and then also conduct the fishery. So we wanted to make it a fishery that someone would be interested in, and that was one way to do it. I think we had a total of 6,000 Chinook allocated to between all 10 permits. We landed about 3,900 Chinook. Then we also landed about 1,000 coho. We did have mixed results as far as how the permittees would describe success. Some of the information we're hearing from the fishermen that did participate was that the startup costs are high, certainly more so for the purse seines than the beach seines. There were low mark rates during the fall season, especially on those Chinook. Logistics were a little complicated as well, just having the fish in tenders and ice and transport. It's first year out, so it's good to know all those things, but those were some of the comments that we received. We did send out a postseason questionnaire so that we could get an idea of how the fishermen were actually experiencing the fishery as well. We will have a comprehensive report, I think, out probably late spring, early summer. Guy will say February. I'll say late spring. I think that's about all I have on the pilot seine fishery. For our 2014 economic measures, one of the guiding principles in our policy is to seek to enhance that overall economic well-being and also the stability of our Columbia River fisheries. And one of the ways we can measure that is to look at the number of angler trips in our recreational fisheries and the ex-vessel values for the commercial fisheries. You can apply multipliers to either one of those metrics to account for the full economic benefit. And also both of those metrics are very susceptible to any outside factors that are certainly beyond our control, run strengths, river condition, mark rates, and so on. For our angler trips, this information is 2014. Well, I guess it has 3 years there, but to compare, this is just below Bonneville. Our angler trips in 2014 were the highest since 1977, and our total Chinook catch for the whole year in 2014 was a record-setting 70,800 fish. This table that you're seeing here does not include any of the fisheries upstream of Bonneville, which would contribute certainly. We have the Hanford Reach Fall Chinook fishery, which is very popular. We also have the Upper Columbia Summer Chinook fishery, which is also a very popular fishery. But the angler trips for 2014, 450,000 angler trips, that's a definitely above average and definitely a good year for our sport fishing constituents. For the commercial fisheries, this is going to include both main stem and select area sites. Our total Chinook catch was the highest since the late 1980s, and our total coho catch was the highest since 2003. The main stem fishery accounted for 60% of the salmon catch. And also of note is the main stem fall Chinook fishery, just that one little piece itself. That's the Zone 4-5 gillnet fishery that occurs in the fall. That accounted for 43% of the whole year, main stem and select areas combined, spring, summer, fall. So that little fishery, if you will, that August through October fishery accounted for nearly half of the whole season. Our seine fisheries aren't included in the table, but they would have added about $65,000 in ex-vessel value this year. So policy performance, I think we're almost done here. Our 2014, certainly we remain within the ESA constraints, the USB Oregon policy, and commission guidelines that are given to us. Our adaptive management protocols, those were enacted in both the spring and summer, that flexibility I talked about to provide access to harvestable fish. We met our season objectives, both above and below Bonneville Sport, both commercial and recreational. We conducted the tangle net gear for the coho in the fall. We'll plan on doing that again next year. We did implement a seine fishery in the fall this year. We'll continue our research and development in those new select area sites for Washington, that's specifically Cathlamet Channel. Our efforts will continue to develop other alternative gears, and we certainly have public processes in place to be sure that we have transparency and give our public the opportunity to provide input. So looking at this year, 2015 and beyond, for spring Chinook, our ESA sharing is going to be 70-30. That is the same as it was last year under commission policy. For summer Chinook this year, the harvest is shared 70-30 for Chinook, and the ESA impacts on sockeye are shared 70-30. We developed those through the North of Falcon process. For fall Chinook, the ESA is shared no more than 70% to the sport and 30% to commercial for both the Chinook, or for Chinook, those seasons developed North of Falcon, and then we'll continue to implement those alternative gear types in our commercial fisheries. And some of the things that we look at so that we can figure out if we are successfully implementing the policy is making sure that we're within the USV Oregon and other management guidelines, making sure that we're meeting our ESA conservation limits for our commercial fisheries, looking at those select area research and developments and see that they result in an increased harvest. We'll look to have that alternative gear be successfully used to harvest additional hatchery salmon. We want to maintain access to those surplus upriver bright fall Chinook. Those are for those fisheries above the Lewis, that Zone 4-5 fishery I mentioned with that ex-vessel value that represented a good portion of the overall season. And we'd like to restore access to those late hatchery coho, and that usually occurs at the end of October. For our recreational fisheries, we'd look to see an increase in angler trips and meet those season objectives, and then also maintain opportunity throughout the basin. And I think that does it.
Any questions? Nicely done. Very, very informative. Lots of information brought together. Very clearly done. Thank you. Commissioner Holtzmiller?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just was curious what kind of an impact do the marine mammals have and where are you at on dealing with them?
Commissioner Holtzmiller, so we still have authority through Section 120 in the Marine Mammal Protection Act to remove certain sea lions that are predating on salmon during the spring right below Bonneville. And thus far, we have removed some 70 sea lions over the course of 6 years, I believe. But that is the extent of our authority at this point in time in terms of management. There is a congressional bill that has last year passed the Natural Resource Committee in Congress, has not been taken up by the full House as of yet, that does give the states more flexibility to address predation in more areas in the lower basin. So we're just awaiting that particular bill at this point in time. The impact right below Bonneville Dam, which is the only area that we have a precise measurement, has ranged from 1 to 4% of the spring Chinook run over the last several years. There are some recent studies by National Marine Fisheries Service that suggest when you look at the lower Columbia Basin in its entirety, upwards of 20 to 30% may be impacted. So that's certainly got our attention in terms of there's some more work being done with that summary to be analyzed by co-managers, et cetera. But certainly with that measurement at Bonneville, if you use the entire 120 miles of the Lower Columbia River, you'd expect it to be quite a bit larger than what we're measuring at Bonneville Dam.
Okay. Other questions? Oh, Commissioner Carpenter, you put up your hand before.
When you were first of all, thank you for the report. I thought it was well done. When you're compiling the recreational angler trips, at what point in the river downstream do you count those and compile those?
So the Lower Columbia from Bonneville Dam downstream to the mouth, buoy 10 is actually the dividing line at the mouth of the Columbia. So Bonneville to below El Waco.
It would just seem, in the spirit of being able to evaluate gains and losses, what the angler trip item amounts to above there. And I bring that up because in September we had a commission meeting over in the Tri-Cities, and I hadn't been over there for quite a number of years. And when I drove over the Vernita Bridge there, you had to bring your own truck of gravel to be able to launch or retrieve your boat. And, I mean, there's some significant angler trips and economic contribution that I guess I'd like to see in this perhaps next year if we could. I think it's a real important item to understand.
Commissioner Carpenter, good point. We actually, in the detailed report, I think we do have the Hanford Reach angler trips in there. And Robin, if I'm correct, it was just over 40,000, 41,900, I think, at the Hanford Reach, which is phenomenal effort.
Well, I haven't read it all, so I'll get to that.
Okay. Commissioner Kaney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as an overall review, because there's a lot of numbers here and trying to keep up, but it would appear that whether it was due to big runs or just things went well, that most of the goals were met. A few isolated cases where they weren't. You had to adapt along the way, which was all part of the plan. So I know we'll hear from some of the folks in the audience, but I wanted your feeling on how did the plan function, just more of a higher level version of what's in all the numbers.
I'll probably mispronounce your name. I'm sorry. I'll just say commissioner. As far as everything went, I think everything went really well. I think the secret was having that adaptive management and that flexibility as we move through the seasons with the uncertainties. Our preseason forecasts create a lot of interest in the fisheries, and that just kind of snowballed, which was good. And we
for instance, in the fall, you know, we had a big forecast. We had a lot of interest, you know, certainly recreationally, and we conducted our fisheries as planned and had some flexibility, even though our run size came in a little bit less. So I think big picture, I think 2014 was a success, and I think part of the secret to that was the flexibility provided in the policy for us to make those changes as we needed to as we moved through the season.
It also seemed that the changing the gear type was less than, you know, stellar. I mean, you're working on it and people are trying new gear, but it just, you know, we heard that a lot from commercial fishermen, that this isn't going to be an easy thing. It's not going to be the final answer. But is that also close to what you feel?
Commissioner, the new gear type is problematic from the commercial industry, you know, basically for the startup costs and the big change. How it performed this year was a good indicator of where we need to find some ideas to get things to work better for them. So I think this was a good start.
If I may, I just may add that with the 10 fishermen that did have permits and did participate in the fishery, there was, as we reported, mixed results. So there were individual quotas. Some fishermen caught the vast majority of their quota. Others caught very few fish. And so there was a different level of experience with the gear. Different areas were better than other areas. And so I think when we do the detailed report that includes the exit interviews with the fishermen, I think that'll be very interesting to the commission.
Commissioner Kenny, one additional thing that was noticed during this fishery is a very low mark rate. The tules are marked fairly high, but they're a very small piece of the population. So the catches, the overall catches were fairly high, but the harvested fish, the kept fish, are fairly low because the mark rate on bright stocks were below 40%. So it makes a big difference on what they can keep with the mark rate so low.
Commissioner Mencken?
Yes, Ron, in your presentation, you said you addressed buyback, and you said, I think, that you spent some time investigating options for funding.
We have, Commissioner Mencken, we have somebody that's working on a buyback. They're working on a questionnaire, looking at different options, looking at options that we've used in the past for funding, whether it's funded by the industry itself or other options for funding. But yeah, it's stuff that we are trying to explore and figure out options for.
How long is that going to take to figure out those options?
So Commissioner Mencken, we're in discussion with Oregon right now in terms of the timing of trying to move forward to begin with a survey to try and get a handle on level of interest, the kind of methods that we could employ. There's a variety of different buyback historical methods. And then funding source, I think what we said in the report is not yet identified. I mean, that's a large part of this, and you know, there is no specific funding that's identified at this point in time. But timing's also part of it. We're trying to coordinate that with Oregon as well.
Director Anderson?
So first off, we're slow on getting going on buyback. So, you know, I'm not going to try to make this sound better than it is. We've spent a fair amount of time looking at how to approach it, and that's where we talked about doing the survey. And we've developed a series of draft questions that we've been talking about. Jennifer Kwan, who's sitting back there, and Guy and Jim Scott and I have been looking at the questionnaire, looking And we were, frankly, pretty close to being ready to send that questionnaire out, and ran into, I don't want to overstate this, but ran into a bit of a snag in that, well, if we're going to, we then need to coordinate that questionnaire with ODF&W, or, you know, make sure, are we surveying both fleets, just ours? Thought it was best to survey both fleets. Haven't got a lot of interest, I guess, shown from Oregon in putting a lot of effort into trying to scope this thing out, and it could just be a workload issue versus an actual degree of interest. I think the funding scenarios, I mean, I don't think there's any secrets as to what they are. I mean, there are. We've had some buyback programs that have had state funding. We've had some buyback programs that have had some federal fundings. We've had some buyback programs that have had industry funded, or we've had buyback programs where there's been a low interest loan come from the federal government and industry is paying that back over a 30-year period through the use of taxing the landed catch as a means of paying those loans back. Commissioner Schmitten and I spent a lot of time trying to develop a buyback program for the coastal Dungeness crab fishery. We've been back and kind of looked at what we did there, looked at those questions to understand whether or not, number one, there's an interest. And, of course, I think whether there's an interest or not depends on how much you're going to pay for the license. Are you going to include boats or not? I'm not a fan of including boats and gear, but that's my opinion. So if you're going to do licenses only, you're going to make, if you're dual licensed, you have to sell both licenses. How much are we going to be willing to pay? Until you've answered that question, it's probably hard for someone who you're surveying to respond with have a response to say, yeah, if you're going to pay me $1 million, I'm really interested. If you're going to pay me $10,000, I'm not so interested. So it's easier said than done, but it hasn't been because we haven't been working on it. But at the same time, we're slow to try to find a pathway forward here in terms of a questionnaire that would help inform us in terms of next steps. But it hasn't been because we've been totally ignoring it.
Commissioner Kehoe.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I have a quick question about the commercial catch in the select area and the X vessel value I'm looking at. I'm just curious, what do you have a sense of the breakout in terms of fish caught on the Washington side? Versus Oregon. I imagine most of it's Oregon, but
I was going to give you a general answer, but Robin has the detail right here, so I'm going to hand it over to her.
She does do the legwork, guy. You're the big answer, big issue guy.
Well, the short answer is yes, Commissioner Kehoe, that the majority of the catch would be from the Oregon, given that three of the four areas are located in Oregon. For the 2000, make sure I got the fall here. Yeah. So Chinook catch was about 25,000. 2,500 came from Deep River, which is our Washington Select Area site. For the coho, 167,000 were kept, and about 27,000 from our Deep River site.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, others? Let me ask you some questions. Let me see, slide. I can't read the numbers here. The one about 2014 economic measures, go back several. 25, I think it is. Yeah, so, right. Second bullet, identifiable economic measures include angler trips and then X vessel values. And you mentioned that multipliers can be applied. I'm wondering, have we applied the multipliers? Do we have that analysis done? I mean, I see the two slides later, the value of the commercial fisheries, but don't see the value of the sport fisheries because we're measuring in terms of angler trips instead of dollar values. And I just wonder why that choice, trips versus dollars?
So, Chair Wacker, what we're doing and or what we did was as we went through the product that we worked with ODFW that led to the policy or recommendations for the policy, what we looked at was an expectation over the course of the transition period of increased angler trips for the recreational fishery and then essentially a stable X vessel value for the commercial fishery. So what we tried to do was just use those same metrics here that we used in the original report as just a relative comparison. Now, I think we all recognize that there are values that can be attached to the recreational angler trips per trip, and also some expansion factor to X vessel value for the commercial fishery as those fish move through the market. So we didn't go through that economic analysis. We just tried to do the relative comparison here.
I think the reason I bring it up, obviously, is because I think we made a commitment in our budget policy document, the budget statement that we made, that we were going to try to capture, you know, economic assessments as we go into these. We've been in tight budget times for quite some time. We're asking both stakeholder groups, user groups, to work with us on fee increases and to sell the fee increases in the face of all these budget cuts we're looking at. I think we do need to have some good solid numbers about the importance of these fisheries. And I think we also signaled our interest in understanding and in aligning the revenue sources with the expenses, the expenditures. So getting all of that information pulled together in this kind of report, I think, would be very helpful making our case. As we heard, Deputy Director Storr showed us some numbers about the increase in the Columbia River endorsement revenues, significant increase in those revenues that exceeded our expectations. So it's an important phenomenon that we're getting in a lot more license revenues. We have to justify that with what we're doing with these fisheries. So Just a comment. Commissioner Kehoe?
Do you have questions?
No.
I was just going to follow up on the angler trips issue. Is that are we able to tease out from the total number of angler trips, you know, actual new anglers or different anglers, or does this include kind of repeat anglers where people go out several days?
Commissioner Kehoe, it's the latter.
Okay.
So this is total angler trips, throughout the season.
Is there been any effort to try to tease out, you know, kind of the different number of participants as opposed to, you know, kind of the folks that are just go out day after day after day?
So our sampling system's not set up for that. I suppose one measure would be the pattern of Columbia River endorsement sales that we can track increases in people that are purchasing those, and of course those are likely new people that are entering the salmon and steelhead fishery.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting component to add to your point, Madam Chair, in terms of, you know, kind of new participants or different participants. So,
mm-hmm. Right, I agree. Thanks. Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we have to look a little bit more long range here, and You know, I think we should look at these things a little differently. The commercial fishery, you know, I think XSL is the way we started, but I think we need to look at a value-added package on their behalf because, you know, they market privately and they do some things, and I think in fairness to try and get a handle on that, I think it's reasonable to do that. But I'll tell you, on the recreational side, there's a lot more to what's spent than angler trips. I have a little knowledge of that in my day job, and it's not, frankly, I just don't think it's a very appropriate comparison of either one. I know we can't do anything about it today, but I think on behalf of all the user groups and the taxpayers of the state, we need to drill down on it, come up with a better model for how we do that in the future. That means we have to get an economist to help with it. I suggest we do that.
Okay. Commissioner Kehoe?
I think in fairness, though, to the department and staff, I think they're going using the information or the guidance put forth in the guidance, or the criteria, I should say, in the guidance. So, I mean, I think these are all good things to look at in the long term. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Agreed. You done good job. You're just doing what we told you to do earlier. We're now rethinking some of these things. So. Good. So you have some more slides to show us on Cathlamet. I mean, is that the next topic, or it's attached?
Those were just in case.
Oh, just in case slides. Okay.
Unless, Madam Chair, you do have interest, we can go to them. But those were actually extra slides in case we need them.
Anyone want to see the slides on the Cathlamet Channel study? Doesn't look like it's necessary. Do you want to see them? Or Commissioner Schmitten?
Chair, it's probably not too early to raise this issue. And actually, I was thumbing through the commission report, the annual review white document on page 19, looking at Summer Chinook. Having been one of those that actually I think I led for the Washington side in reaching the final agreement, which we reached on November 11th, 2012. And for Summer Chinook, 2013 to 14, this is for sports now, 60%, 15 to 16, 70%, in 2017 is 98 to 100 is what was agreed. To note the history and then think what signal we want to send, that agreement then went out to Washington and Oregon. Went to Oregon first for their timing. And they proposed that, but ODF&W adopted something different. They adopted for 2017 non-specified. That put us in a difficult position because we then proposed the 98 to 100% for 2017 and beyond as we had jointly agreed. We ended up indicating to what we passed was the statement determined after additional discussions with ODF&W. My point is we had an agreement. I don't think it's too early to send a message down to Oregon that we expect that agreement to, we will go through a discussion, but that we will continue to seek what we had agreed. And I want to point this out since I won't be here and had a major hand in the shaping of this, that I do think we should send that sort of message down to Oregon within the next year.
Thank you. Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you. I'm going to start calling up the public. We have quite a few people who've signed up to testify on this topic. Director Anderson, do you want to say something?
Two things. One is the agreement was amongst the work group, and so if a letter is to be sent, it seems like it would be appropriate for the commission to send a letter to the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission, not look at something to go from the director to their director.
Okay.
And then The only other question I have, I've started to burn up any airtime with this, but we had talked about Michilak cuts earlier this morning, and there, I understand there's already been implemented a reduction by ODF&W of 250,000 spring Chinook, and we had a question about whether or not that would impact the releases in the safe areas, and just wondering if you happen to know the answer to that.
Director Anderson, I don't know where they've taken those cuts. I don't believe it's the safe areas, but I can't say that for certain.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good point. So we will assign the topic of that letter on the summer Chinook negotiation that must take place to the Fish Committee.
Madam Chair, if I may, we met Commissioner Minkin and Smitten and myself, and I think Bob Keel sat in as well, with Jim Scott, and went over that paper trail. And if it's within reason, perhaps Jim could put a draft together. He's very familiar with it, and we could go out for signature.
And then the Fish Committee would review the draft and then make a recommendation to the full commission.
I believe that would be appropriate.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now we're ready for public testimony. Most of you have testified before, but those who have not, here are the rules. The commission offers each citizen 3 minutes. When you hear the beeping noise, that means the 3 minutes is up, and we'd like you to wrap your comments up, conclude your remarks. I'll call you up two at a time. Sit at a seat in front of a microphone. You don't have to put your face right up to the mic, just a few inches away. And we look forward to hearing your comments. First two people, Steve Matthews and Jerry Lowe. Would you come forward, please? Hey, Mr. Matthews.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioners. I'm Steve Matthews, retired professor of fisheries from the University of Washington. I live in Ellensburg. And you've heard from me before, and you're aware that I'm pretty negative on seining in the Columbia River per se. Mr. Kehoe, for sure, be assured, I think seining is fine everywhere else. I presented you with some scientific input last time that indicates that seine mortality studies elsewhere, bycatch mortality studies elsewhere, particularly in Canada and Alaska, would give you an expected range probably in the area of 20% to 50% from these previous studies. Now, you're all aware, too, that the Columbia River has a much more complex handling, sorting, and environmental set of environmental issues than these other studies, so that probably the rate is going to be in a high percent of 20% to 50% range if you actually had a production fishery. I think Mr. Roller just told you how many fish the seiners had to throw back this year, unmarked fish. This is a real concern. Now, last year, the last spring, the tribes and NIMS, as I'm aware, echoed these concerns, so productive seining was deferred in favor of further testing. The results of these tests seem to get out there further and further, and I haven't been able to see them yet, per se, but I read newspaper accounts and scuttlebutts and so on, and they all fall into the same general story that seining is only going to be marginally better than gill netting in terms of bycatch mortality. No surprise. You're also well aware that you can set a large mesh gill net, I think it's 8-inch or maybe 9-inch now, and this is going to pass most of the steelhead and virtually all the sockeye, and particularly important, it's going to pass the jacks, coho and chinook, which are much better off in a sport fishery. You've also heard how well we've done in the last couple of years in the Columbia River. We're getting some really good input out of the wild stock, sockeye, fall chinook, upriver brights, and so on, Snake River falls. And we've had a pretty well-regulated gillnet fishery, which most of the catch came from the main stem. I'm not aware that ESA stocks have been suffering further in these last two good years. In fact, there's some excellent returns on some of them. I think it's time to consider getting rid of that reference to the 2017 date in the Kitsap plan by which saying, any rate,
you can finish your sentence.
Fundamentally, I'm saying, get rid of saying. It's been highly controversial, and it keeps us from going forward on some of the really good points in this plan. I think Oregon, the Fish Commission in Oregon, is considering this as well.
Thank you. Bruce Crookshanks. Okay, Mr. Lowe.
Hey, my name is Jerry Lowe. I'm from Aberdeen. Gentlemen, Madam Chair. Kind of hard to follow that TAC group that was just here. There was a lot of numbers thrown out there, and some of them were a little fuzzy. I don't agree with all of them, particularly the management of the spring salmon and the commercial fishery in the spring salmon in the Columbia River. We went through this over and over, and we adopted the tangle net, the tooth net, as a viable fishing method to minimize the impact on the ESA fish. And yet, like Mrs. Elke said, we had twice as much time on the spring fishery with the 8-inch net than we did with the tangle net. The fishermen are willing to use the tangle net. We have the tangle net, but management dictates that we use the 8-inch net twice as much time. The reason for this, or part of the reason for this, or the rationale for this, is this buffer business. We have a buffer that was set up. It was supposed to be 30% buffers. We don't go over the estimate because we start fishing these fish as they come in. They took the commercial fishery, the tangle net fishery. We have almost 100% certainty of what we've done. We had two openings with almost 100% certainty of our impacts because of observers, and they were short 8-hour openings. And then we sat there, and we don't do anything again until the shad show up and stuff. We need to have a constructive management where we use that tooth net earlier in the season. They throw us some bones at the end of May, the 1st of June. It's obvious just to kill the ESA, to burn up our allowable ESA impacts, where we could be fishing on those hatchery fish with the tooth net and minimize our ESA impacts earlier in the year. If we could just get in the river quicker with that. That's all I got.
Thank you. Vern Forsberg.
Madam Chair, Commissioner.
Mr.
Cruikshank. My name is Bruce Cruikshanks. I began commercial fishing in 1971. I worked very hard to learn how to catch fish with a gill net, one of the most effective selective gears today. Time, place, mesh size, make it so. My son Darren joined the business in 1984 at the age of 15. Together we have built a small wholesale business. My grandson, Derek, joined us in 2014 at the age of 18. We have been involved in management forums throughout the years. I'm a past president of the Columbia River Fishermen's Protective Union, which was incorporated in 1884. The CRPU is one of the oldest conservation unions on the West Coast. My son, Darren, now serves as president. Your current suggestions to raise commercial license fee will cause a hardship on the young and older fishermen. Why? Because the younger fishermen are learning their craft, and we older fishermen can't fish as hard as we once did. The crew license would hurt the part-time fishermen, because a lot of times you have a crew guy, you only need them for one night or two nights, and you have a large crew license. We're going to have to do something else. I don't know what we're going to do. Therefore, you need To therefore, if you need more revenue, I would suggest it be on the landing tax. That way, the more fish we catch, the more tax we pay. I would also suggest that you are overlooking another revenue, another commercial fishing fisheries, such as charter boats and guides that fish for hire. They should be required to fill out fish tickets each day and pay the landing fees, as do the other commercial fisheries. CRPU was a leader in the fight to have fish ladders installed at Bonneville Dam, resulting in the preservation of upriver sturgeon salmon today. If it wasn't for our union, there wouldn't be ladders on the Bonneville Dam, and that's a fact. And as far as the CA goes, they should spend their money on efforts to fix the sea lion predation in the Columbia River. Next to the dams, they are causing the most damage to our wild and hatchery fish. And the commission's actions slating against the commercial industry, who represents the Joe Q public. If we don't fish, there's no fish in the market unless they get it from an Indian fishery or some other Canadian fishery or a Russian fishery or a Bristol Bay fishery. And I think it's just plain wrong. And I think you people need to reconsider this plan, because we can coexist with the sport fishery, and we've always been there to do the mop-up and the cleanup. And we can still do that and not waste these fish that contribute to the economy of the state of Washington.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Sorry. Kent Martin. Could you come forward, please? Okay, Mr. Forsberg. Welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioners. I'm Vern Forsberg. My family's been fishing since 1900. I'd like to address the same fishery that's being proposed. I spent 4 years in the study program, the first year in the feasibility study, and then I was one of two beach centers in the mortality study in the upper part of Zone 5. So, I don't know, I never kept track, but probably made 700 sets under here, so I've seen a little bit of it. I think we all know it's only going to work for a few boats and in a few spots. And I guess nobody knows yet what's going to happen to the rest of people, get kicked to the curb. But kind of what bothers me is this fishery has evolved since 1850, and skiffs and sailboats and saltries to wooden boats and power boats, canneries, and to the boats and the gear we got today, and fresh market, frozen market. And it's evolved from linen nets to nylon nets to tooth nets to recovery boxes. The whole thing has evolved for 170 years. Management's evolved too. I mean, they've gone to 5 days a week, practically all year long, not really caring what happened to each individual little creek. But now it's really concentrated on every little creek, and they got a lot of tools and toolbox. They use our nets, different mesh sizes and whatnot, tooth nets, recovery boxes, and they get into a pretty good job. It's pretty selective. And we've got record runs coming back, three in a row now. And it bothers me is all this is thrown away. I mean, it's because one man in Oregon decided so. So I'll throw all this away. Now, the gill net's been a good tool for management. Take the fall season, the gill netters will go out early. When it's scratchy, they'll go out because it's economical. That gives a lot of information on the run size, the timing, and composition to the states. They can check the catch, see what's going on. And then our catch is penciled in the late part. And as the run develops, we adjust the seasons. And the guys will go out late and scratch because it'll pay. It's not going to happen with the same fishery. Those guys aren't going to be out there early because it won't pay. They won't be there. And when it comes to clean up the excess at the end of season, if that happens to be, they're not going to be there either. It just won't pay. They're not going to go tear up a scene for nothing. And so far, there's not a law that says you have to go. So where does that leave us? Where does it leave your scene fishery? He's right in the peak. That's the only way they can operate. The only way it's going to be economic. So they're going to be in the peak, in the daylight, in the middle of the peak of the season, in the middle of the sport fleet. So I think, if anything, this is going to make conflicts worse.
Thank you. Sir, here. You probably didn't hear the beeping noise.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I have a little problem. Too many diesel engines.
So thanks very much for your testimony. Okay. Greg Johnson. Okay, Mr. Martin.
Commissioners, my name is Kent Martin. I'm a commercial fisherman from Skamakawi, Washington. I have some thoughts on the Columbia River Management Plan. 2013 and 14 have been characterized by large over-escapements of hatchery and natural spawn fall Chinook in the hundreds of thousands of both, and large over-escapements around 235,000 of hatchery coho in 2014. Agency press releases trumpeting the vibrant nature of the sport fishery last summer and fall ignore the fact that the actual bite rate for fall Chinook and coho on the main stem Columbia is around 10%, often under, way under. So basically, you have to remove 10 fish or more from the commercial fishery to put one or less into the sport fishery. The other nine end up as hatchery and or spawning ground surpluses and deny economic sustenance to the lower Columbia and coastal communities that have depended upon them for the last century. During the hearings in developing this plan, I recall a recreational fisher declaring a sport caught fish has 10 times the value of a commercially caught fish. Now, aside from the flawed economics of comparing the landed value of a commercially caught fish with every hot dog and hairpin that can possibly be associated with recreation, there remains the negative value of large over-escapements into limited habitats and large hatchery surpluses being sold for a fraction of their value. So the press releases swoon over the record 6,000 coho catch in the main stem Columbia, but you had to run 900,000 and 235 of them hatchery coho by them to get there. The 26,000 celebrated Chinook sport catch in the Hanford Reach came from a 400,000 fish escapement over McNary Dam, which is over six times the escapement goal. This kind of sport priority is not sustainable economically, politically, or biologically. Finally, I want to make a couple comments on the seine fishery. I personally believe it has some potential. But the drumbeat to put seines into Zone 4 and 5 on the part of some recreational fishing groups is insanity, with a capital I. This is a thinly disguised ploy to engender conflicts with recreational boaters, sailboaters, yachters, water skiers during the time of year when those activities are at their peak. And there could well be a public safety issue here. We do not need to go there. Seine fisheries should be below the Longview Bridge. Finally, to the value of recreation in Wakayakum County, it's the second smallest county in the state. We have six boat launches, four parks, a marina, and a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Refuge, and four food banks. Incredible, obscene poverty. Permits have been from Alaska fisheries, which brought huge amounts of money, have been exiting. The only one that I know of in the last eight that have transferred out of Wakayakum County that stayed in the lower Columbia was my Bristol Bay permit. It went to a guy in Astoria. The rest of them went to places like Anchorage and Anilchik and Cordova. It's going right back out of the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Bryce Devine. Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, Chairman. My name is Greg Johnson. I'm a commercial fisheries advisor. I've also recently was appointed to the SAS committee to season setting process with PFMC representing netting. Unfortunately, I left my outline at home, so I'm going to ad lib, which I just found out 10 minutes ago. Economic measures relative to 214 and expectations in the policy. Well, obviously, if you looked at the graph, we did well. Okay, this is not relevant to the policy. We're fortunate enough to have an upriver bright run that's through the roof, and everybody's been getting a lot of benefit from. And also, we had a very significant coho return that bolstered our position. Just a few points about this. The select area relative to those harvests, it was my understanding from the Oregon staff that 9% of the select area harvest is relative to policy decision, new input. So keep that in mind. And this, and then also, we were fortunate, very fortunate, recently to be operating at the maximum of both the LCN and the Snake River Wild matrices. In other words, our impact levels are currently at their highest. And this is an important issue to us as commercial, well, everybody, because this is what everybody is living off of, are these impacts. But as these, eventually we're going to come out of these high times, and when we do, and we're in this 80-20 sharing program, the opportunity, there's no way we could even attempt to take this advantage of this run size with of the Upper River Bright run size with our current impacts. I'd also like to take note of relative to the policy decisions being made in the Willapaw and what was made last year in the Grace Harbor, and in the effective shift that may occur or will occur likely to the Columbia River. This past fall in zones 4 or 5, we had 148 landings, which is a new high for that area relative to post-ESA times. I would say with those people in those fisheries I mentioned in the Willapa are going to have no choice but to shift their efforts if they want to keep their economics up. And the place to come right now is certainly the Columbia River. And so with those people, when I mentioned 148, that was last year's landings, and I would anticipate within the next 2 years to have a couple hundred participants in the Zone 4 or 5 area. And here's my point is during the policy development, we talked about 50 seine vessels perhaps potentially being able to function and economically viable. I'm not sure what happens to these other 150 guys. And thanks.
Did you have another thought that you wanted to conclude with?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you. Tim Buckendahl? Okay, Mr. Devine.
Thank you, Chair Wecker. Commission, thanks for the opportunity to speak. I've spoken before in 2012 on this seine issue in the Columbia River. I'm a commercial fisherman in the Columbia River, and I had my real doubts on it being realistic. We're 2 years into the transition period, and my doubts have worsened. I applied for a permit to do a beach seine last year. I wasn't drawn, and I'm glad that I wasn't. I would have lost money. The real fault that I see with this gear is, besides this expense, is that we're trying to have a mark select fishery on a stock that the stock dynamics are upside down. We should have a 20% protected rate and an 80% mark rate, and it's just flip flopped. There's way too many wild fish that are not protected, that are, or that really should be the target, that are in the mix. You just can't make money handling that many fish. And I've read the policy through and where we're going to be at in 2017 and so forth, and I think we're going to be operating on the caveats, where the commercial fisheries winds up short, and you're going to have to make adaptive management changes, and you're going to have to propose on short notice openings in the river because the select areas are not going to make up for it. We haven't, as far as, you know, the progress over this four-year transition, it just, we're halfway through that, and we're maybe, I don't know, 10% through the transition. You know, there's no really viable new select areas. There's no more area, and there's really no more fish. Very few. The added fish smolt production is, or plants have been very low. So, and that's about all I've got to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert Sudar. Okay, Mr. Buckendahl.
Good afternoon, Chair, Commissioners. My name is Tim Buckendahl. I'm 40 years old. I've been building in the Columbia River for 12 years now. 5 years ago, I built my own boat, purchased a commercial fishing permit. The whole time, I have fished zones 4 and 5 in the fall, and that fishery makes up a very large portion of my income. This past year, I went out on a limb, spent $3,200 on a new tangle net to fish for coho in the Middle River, my home where I can be close. It was a shot in the dark, but I hit my target in the 8 days that I got to use it.
During those days, the average of non-marked coho was approximately 10 per day. Not bad for alternative gear. And that's basically my thought. I try and keep numbers of my own just so I can see what the difference is. Different parts of the river, different people have different.
Okay.
Headed to the select areas, these places are like a Richter scale at best. In the past 3 years, there's been no profit in the spring fishing in Young's Bay and also Tongue Point. For coho, in the fall, it's not been much better. 2 years ago, I put up a new coho net and went backwards in Young's Bay. This past fall, the time I spent there finally paid off, and I made a few dollars. With the modifications coming from Willapa Bay and Grays Harbor, those fishermen more than likely will migrate to the Columbia River and the select areas to fill the void in their pockets. This will put even more fishermen in the competition for those fish. On to the seining. If we're forced into seining for our fish, I would have to go out and buy about approximately $10,000 net, hire two deckhands, modify my boat, approximately $6,000 to $8,000, and on top of that, about $2,500 a year for insurance to make sure I cover my deckhands. All this to be able to harvest what you guys, this year was 100 to 300 fish per year on a decent run. What would I get on a small return? This is not economically viable. Option two, I can go back to being a deckhand on another outfit, which Greg Johnson said 50 seiners, 150 other guys. Okay, we would go from 100% profit to a 10% crew share, which is a 90% drop in what we would have for our income. Again, it's not viable. I'm a gill netter. That's what I know. I do understand the matrix and learning to try and come up with alternative gear for ESA stocks. I've put up tangle nets for spring fish. I put up tangle nets for a coho. I did 1 year of beach seining with Bruce Cruikshanks the first year it came out. I've saw it. I've done it. And it is difficult to do in different places. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Heath Heikola. Mr. Sudar.
My name is Robert Sudar. I'm a I was originally a commercial seiner in Puget Sound. I've been a buyer on the Columbia for about 30 years. I'm also a commercial advisor, and I've been on all of the working groups over the last 6 years where we've tried to resolve some of these sport commercial conflicts. The first point I want to make is that I appreciate the fact that your endorsements may be going up, but the trend on angler license sales is down. You aren't selling any more angler licenses than you were 10 years ago. So there isn't a growth in that industry. It isn't growing anywhere in the country. It isn't growing here. I have nothing against sport fishing. I've sport fished a little bit myself, but it isn't a growth industry. Meanwhile, population in the state is going the other direction. We've gained more people in the state of Washington in the last 15 years than all of the licenses you sell annually in the state. These are the people that we service. The ones between the red line and the blue line, the people who don't sport fish, who look to commercial fisheries like ours to get their fish. There was an article in the PI yesterday that said that in a recent survey of chefs, the number one issue for 2015 is going to be local sourcing of seafood and meat. And we are the local fishery for Chinook and Coho, in our fishery on the Columbia. And it's not just fall Chinook. As a buyer, from my first opportunity in the spring to bring spring Chinook till the season ends in October or whenever it happens to end, the markets want fish. They want our fish off the Columbia. It's a local product. It's a high-quality product. It's as good as they can get anywhere. And eliminating our fishery, converting it to a seine fishery, there is no conservation benefit from this sort of an approach. None of the things that you've been preaching through this new policy are being shown to hold up in the whole thing. We did a lot with our reduced impacts again this year. Like Greg said, it was a big return. But nonetheless, we're able to use our lower impacts. But what are we going to do on a smaller run? And giving away our summer Chinook, Commissioner Mankin, Commissioner Schmitten, taking us to zero on the summer Chinook, another great fishery with a lot of interest in the marketplace at a time of year when there isn't a lot of other Chinook on the market in most years. The spring Chinook, Markets are calling me in October. Well, actually, they do start asking in October, and they want to know in February and March, when are we going to have some spring Chinook? The marketplace wants those. The people in the state want those fish. It isn't just a fall fishery for a marketer like me. It's all of the components. So staff may have said that this was is moving along smoothly. I just don't like where it's going. I don't see that it's going to be good for the residents of the state that buy their fish from commercial fishermen. I don't see that it's going to be good for our industry. As a longtime seiner, I have real doubts about how that is going to ever fit into the picture. If you have any other questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, Liz Hamilton. Hey, Mr. Heikkilä.
Chair Wecker, members of the commission, Director Anderson, good to see you. I want to single you out, Commissioner Schmitten, and thank you for your service to the commission. You are a rare breed, which is an East Sider who actually has fish expertise, is into fish in a big way. So we absolutely appreciate your service and thank you for it. It goes back to, you know, remember you when you were in Silver Spring, Maryland, and now you're at Sockeye Point, I think you call it. So thank you for your service. Well, you know, I think a lot has been said. I think the numbers really speak for themselves in terms of the harvest levels. The runs have done very, very well. I'll let Liz kind of cover what the harvests have been. They've been record, so I think that's very positive. I think there are serious questions about looking a forward that I'll address. I just want to first kind of start. I was here this morning, one of the few members of the public, here for this. And this document does always intrigue me. And this red line that actually is an increase in license sales, I think, tells you that the last several years we are seeing growing participation, growing license sales out there. Commissioner Kehoe, the Columbia River endorsement, actually, one, it's really hard to measure fully the participation because it's not required at Buoy 10 right now, which is a huge fishery that has had huge growth as well, and that's actually something we're looking at moving forward. But you look at the economics of it, I've spent a lot of time in this budget. All of the commercial license fee revenue and excise tax from Columbia River Harvest is less than $200,000 a year. And I know we talked a lot about some of the Hood Canal numbers this morning. By comparison, just the Columbia River endorsement generates $1.5 million a year, as you guys saw on that chart, $3 million a biennium. If you count in the license sales as well, that's about $6 million a year in revenue to the department from Columbia River license sales. That's huge. It is a huge number. We've got a fee increase, as you guys know, and it's entitled, you know, Maintaining Salmon Fisheries. That fee increase ends up about $6.6 million is what is needed, and we were talking about the about $10 million more dollars the department was going to get. Of that, $5.2 million, or 78%, is coming from the recreational sector and guides and charters, which fish on the recreational allocation, and 22% is coming from the commercial side. So, you know, I the message I'm trying to deliver is to fund this department moving forward. You're going to have to sell licenses and provide opportunity. And then before I run out of time, on the economics, I really want to encourage you to look at the economics, this discussion about comparing angler trips to economics. Let's look at the economics, and you guys did it in that Willapa presentation where you showed with 10% of the harvest in Willapa, the recreational sector was generating 50% more economic value, and that wasn't just an X vessel value for the commercial side. It also had the, you know, the multiplier effect on there. So I think I encourage that. Your policy called for staff to do that, and I absolutely encourage it. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Hamilton?
Chair Wecker, Commissioner Anderson, Commissioners, or Director Anderson, Happy New Year, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. And Raleigh, I have a picture of you in waders from before Silver Springs holding up a couple steelheads, so in my office. So thank you for decades of doing what's best for the fish here in the Northwest. We appreciate that. I have a few thoughts and a few suggestions going forward. In part of the staff presentation, they talked about the safe areas being closed because of hitting ESA impacts. This happens from time to time, so I think that's a cautionary note. As we move forward to expand safe areas, especially the Cathomet area, to really be thinking about that, because we've got ESA constraints that are being bumped up against right now in the current safe areas. There is a study that Bonneville Power Administration did that shows that about 72-75% of the gillnetters use the safe areas, so there are a lot of the fishermen that are in there right now. So just some caution moving forward on that. With regards to the existing safe areas, I think the thing that's very important to know is that 8 out of the last 10 years, there's been more fish harvested commercially in the safe area than 140 miles of main stem sport fishing. And, of course, as the presentation showed, many, many, many more fish were caught in the main stem. So there's an abundance of fish being caught by the commercial fleet. In fact, there were nearly 200,000 caught in the safe areas this last year. So lots of fish to market. Of course, we got to think about the ocean commercial fishing and the tribal commercial fishing, which are providing fish to market as well. This is important, but it isn't falling apart. The other thing about the safe areas we need to remember is that the hatchery releases have gone from 10 million to 16 million in just the last half a dozen years, and it's going to grow further. So we are taking care of the economics. And speaking of economics, Commissioner Carpenter made a really good point. I will share with you a study we commissioned from Southwick Associates. They're the premier outdoor recreation economists in the nation. The last 10 years, they've done two studies for the federal government on the economics of hunting, fishing, hiking, bird watching, all that sort of thing across the U.S., state by state. We hired them to look at what Columbia River sport fishing was worth. Now, I only paid $10,000. You want a really good study. It costs a lot more than that if you want to include the capital. This was just trip expenditures, and it was roughly $100 a day. So if you want to look at those angler trips that you have on there, I'll send you the study so that you can use that as the small end multiplier, but understand the study is very clear. There's no capital expenditures in there. No boats, no motors, no trailers, no rods, no reels, no downtown Larry Carpenter jobs. So if I could close, I want to compliment the staff. Last year. I mean, this in-season management is a couple of days a week of meeting with the public and talking to the public and trying to adapt what's happening in-season, water conditions, run changes, and all that. And I just think they did a fantastic job, and we met most of our objectives. Looking forward, if I may, I'm really stretching it here, I know that, but looking forward, as we're trying to expand the economics of these fisheries, we have two areas that are underutilized. One is the Buoy 10 fishery in September, and it's overcapitalized in August. I mean, you couldn't fit another boat down there in August, but in September, people tend to go home. So we need to be thinking about how can we attract visitors to Ilwaco in September. And I think the way that we do that is we make sure that when they're fishing for all the coho, if they catch a hatchery Chinook, they should be able to keep it. So we need to figure out a way to have a season structure set up that there's enough incidental left to keep a hatchery Chinook if they get it. It's going to bring more people down there. And the other part of this is the Middle River. Even though I know you met your season objectives, to the people who are in the Tongue Point to Warrior Rock fishery, they're being cut short in the fall, even meeting the season objectives. So anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and thank you all for your service. And I'll say I'll miss you, but I hope we see you again somewhere else. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Okay, that concludes the public hearing on this item.